This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Right, folks, good morning. Welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. Full lineup as usual, and half a studio today. I think guys are fighting traffic out there. So we've got Martin and Lawrence in studio. How are you, gents? Are you good? Wait, what's up? Let's put your levels up there.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. Now we can hear you. Okay.
Wonderful.
Awesome. Your guys drive in this morning fine?
Yeah, actually quicker than I expected.
I was in a BMW, I didn't care.
So you're happy to sit in traffic if you're driving a fancy car?
Oh no, because people sort of expect you to drive like an idiot, so I just pushed my way into where I needed to go.
As you do?
Yeah.
Okay. Fazana, how's it?
Good, thanks, new time.
Yeah, good. So Lawrence driving like a true BMW driver?
Yeah, huh? Well, I'm in a Hilux.
You guys are a complete swap, huh? Complete swap.
Well, that's, you know, I did that on purpose. I thought it would be really funny to see a small little girl in a big
car.
I had a tough time in traffic this morning.
I watched her throw a ladder when she got out the vehicle. I want, not to the script or anything, but this morning, and I don't know if you guys have started to notice it, but obviously, you know, Monday mornings, rain, you're going to expect the worst, right? And there's nothing more that really rubs me the wrong way than when you're sitting in traffic and some oak thinks he is allowed to then drive into oncoming traffic just to jump a queue. We have it a lot.
The taxis are very guilty of it on your side of the world.
North
Riding.
Very, very bad, huh? So, I mean, you're sitting there and these guys just think, no, it's fine. And
then they drive on the pavement.
So they drive into the oncoming lane. When they see a car coming in the direction that it's supposed to be, they just move over or they just push in.
I'd like to see them try that on the freeway.
Yes. Well, yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, I had it this morning as well, sitting waiting at a robot. Now, after I've done the school run, I can sit through four or five robot changes before I get to cross over the road that I want to cross over. And this poopall came and sat in a turning right lane and went straight. And I mean, there's no cars in the turning right lane. So he's like, you know, skipped a queue of about 35 people.
That I can still sort of handle.
I can't.
What gets me is, guys, that when we get to that robot that you've been sitting waiting at, and then the guys will cross over the intersection and then sit in the middle of the intersection.
Yes.
You know, well, I mean, we've unpacked it on the show. It's illegal to do that. You're not allowed to.
You're sitting in the middle of the intersection and the robots are not changed and nobody can cross because you're sitting there like an idiot.
Causing chaos. But I mean, what has been done about it? And this is my whole thing about visible policing. Like, surely we need more visible policing.
We've got visible policing.
In some places.
We see them sitting on the off-ramps and stuff.
Sure.
Waiting to... But they're not doing anything.
Yeah,
but they're just
sure
there.
If I'm allowed to bring this up, but the taxi bosses and stuff have paid off cops and things.
I'm sure.
The thing is, though, they're not that. We would love to see them actually, you know, take on the taxis, but they won't.
Well, just anybody
not taking anybody on.
Not just the taxis. Anybody who breaks the rules of the road should be brought to book. End of story. That is why That is why we have rules of the road. That is why there are yellow arrows that say this is a turning right lane. You're not allowed to go straight, chap. Mm-hmm. You know, and guys just think that, oh, you know, it's stuff. I don't care. I don't have to obey those rules.
I think it comes down to a general lack of respect for your fellow road users.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely.
That's the long and the short of it. I'm more important because my hurry is more important than yours.
Yeah. Whereas I've woken up an extra hour and a half earlier, and I know that I need to, you know, beat traffic to get to where I need to be on time, but some oak guys will stuff it, you know, and yeah, who cares? So anyway, those oaks are all douchebags as far as I'm concerned, and I'm happy to tell them that I did have a full go at this oak. And then he turned around and swore at me, and I was like, where do you even get off telling me off when you're in the wrong?
Yeah,
100%
yeah,
in the wrong. Anyway, it's my bitch for the morning. All right.
Don't be the policeman.
I'm not going to be the policeman. But talking about police, no warning sign is required. What is the deal with hidden traffic cameras in South Africa? So you're driving along. What looks like you think is a green electricity box is not a green electricity box, but it's actually a hidden camera. Nice to know that it is legal. They are allowed to camouflage their cameras. Well, the cops are, the law enforcement agencies. They are allowed to hide them or disguise them. I personally don't have a problem with that because, to my point just now, you should be following the rules of the road.
Exactly. Now, we all know, when you took your learners, back roads, 60 k's an hour.
Correct.
Freeway, 120.
Yes.
If you are going faster
and national
than
roads,
that,
80.
You are going to get nailed.
Unless you drive a fancy car like Mr. Cliff. No, everybody has to follow the rules of the road. Yes.
And that's exactly it. So you know that you are not supposed to be speeding there. Whether they put up a sign warning you that they're, you know, that the speed limit is 60 or not is irrelevant. You should know that you're not allowed to drive that fast.
Look, in principle, I agree with you all. I agree with you both.
And that is why I have a love-hate relationship with the tripods.
Yes.
Those guys that hide behind the bushes.
Okay.
That I can't quite stomach that. But the land positions, where you have that pole with the box on top of it. If you get caught or snapped, that's your own fault.
Absolutely. Well, because you can see it, you know what it's there for, you know what it's going to do.
If you get caught speeding, it's your own fault.
Yeah.
Really, in all honesty.
What were you going to say there?
Speed entrapment. It's not speed enforcement, it's speed entrapment.
Thank you. There's a big difference between
it's highway robbery, basically.
Yeah.
They will nail you for $500 if you on a downhill, and I've seen this numerous times.
With a tailwind.
With a tailwind, probably not. But even on a downhill, on the N1 between, I think it is New Road and Allendale.
Yeah.
There's a long downhill section. Even if you take your foot completely off the gas, your car will speed up.
But that's why you got a brake pedal.
Yeah. So, you creep up to 132 and they'll nail you with a 500 rand fine. But they will not do anything about those guys who pass on a blind rise or on around a blind corner.
But
they will also not do anything about the pedestrians.
Yeah.
And the guys keeping traffic lights.
Yeah, absolutely. And guys driving into oncoming traffic.
That brings it down to entrapment. I'm sorry. The Metro Police do not do what they're supposed to. This is an easy cash cow, and I will still maintain that speed trapping, the way we know it, it's an easy cash cow. It's about the money. It's not about road safety.
No, stop. I mean, in my personal opinion, I would absolutely 100% agree with you there. You know, they do generate quite a substantial amount of income.
Well, they generate quotas. Income when people actually pay, and that's the, you know.
File 13.
Yeah. For majority, the ones that get posted,
yeah,
they never see the light of day.
So,
but when you've signed for one,
yes,
that's you pay that. Otherwise, when you go and try and get your license for your car next year or try and renew something.
Which actually leads to the next story, which is contested traffic fines. So what are the rights? But just quickly, before we go into this, so I see by law, only if they're doing speed entrapment I've lost my train of thought here. When they do speed monitoring over average speed monitoring yes. over a specific distance, they have to tell you that there's cameras and that is what they're doing.
So well, yeah, the entire N3 from Joburg all the way down to Pinetown is that. Yeah.
And weirdly enough, I agree with that kind of enforcement.
Well, yeah, because then you can do 130 in one place, but in the places where it is dangerous, you got to slow down anyway.
Mm.
Or you can take a gap and overtake and get back to your normal speed.
Back to your normal speed, exactly. Because if you are overtaking, you're going to have to, naturally, you have to be going faster than the guy that you're
passing.
And
this is the thing, is with this new traffic law that they're trying to pass, it's, or maybe they have passed it already, I don't know. It basically limits your ability to contest a fine that has been issued to you.
But you can contest the fine as long as it's within a 30-day period of you receiving that fine. I don't know if you know, but the article that I'm referencing here, a gentleman got a fine 5 months after the date of incident. What were they doing for 5 months? Why did it take so long? Surely that should just be scrapped.
I can honestly speak from experience here. In 2015, I went down to Cape Town, and I managed to pick up a speeding fine outside of Colesberg.
Yes.
Oh,
I got that traffic fine 2 months ago.
Oh, geez, though.
2 years it took the Colesberg municipality to send me that traffic fine. And I have now sent them a letter saying, excuse me?
Yeah.
What kind? Are you guys trying to be funny or something?
Yeah, I've forgotten about that one already.
Mm. Yeah.
Sure, but... So you can contest them. If we just have a look, and just to give the listeners some insight into how you can do that, you pretty much have to, you'll have to write a letter to the traffic department with our postal service. I have no idea how it's going to get there. And then obviously you've got to, you know, have a compounding notice number, and you've got to have all your evidence, and you can post, fax, or email your letter. But you can contest them, but just make sure you do it within the 30-day window and see what happens. But if you contend and you lose
criminal
that,
record.
Well, it doesn't say that here, but it says that they can actually increase the size of your fine by an additional R200.
But generally, if you
I think it depends what you
the thing
what
is
you
that fight you do in. You do 150 in a 120 zone. No, you get fined.
Yes,
you contest the fine. You lose that argument in court.
Yeah.
You then get a criminal record because it's a criminal offence.
It is a criminal offence.
You get a criminal record, and that goes, it's a permanent mark on your record. Mm-hmm. So most people don't bother, you know.
What's no, I think guys would just, well, listen, I think in this day and age, 500 rand is a lot of money. Mm. You know, you can't buy much with it, but I'd rather have it in my pocket than in somebody else's. Some really good news, and I know we touched on it briefly in 2 weeks ago, but the first series production Mercedes-Benz AMG C63 has come off the assembly line, and that happened at the end of Jan. What was really, really fascinating, though, is Mercedes-Benz South Africa had to put an additional 200 million rand of high-tech equipment into the existing engine and trim assembly lines, including new indexing devices, new conveyors, axle manipulators. You guys know what that stuff is.
Yeah.
And a lot of ancillary equipment. That excites me, because I must say, at the Festival of Motoring, the first one in
2016,
I saw a black C63. And not being a kind of, you know, petrol head car fanatic, that car just did something for me. It's just a beautiful looking vehicle. So when I saw that we actually now manufacturing them here for export, I thought that was quite a nice thing to see.
It's nice to know that the worldwide manufacturers are seeing South Africa as a destination that can, you know, not just your normal passenger vehicles like Fiestas and Polos, 3 Series and Polos and stuff.
Yeah.
That we actually have the capability of putting out a C63 Black Edition. You know?
Some world class machinery.
I've had some comments regarding quality. What do you guys think about now the quality of production of the C63?
Well, the East London Mercedes plant has received numerous awards over the last few years for their quality levels, as in they are reckoned among the best on those production lines.
Don't sell South Africa short. We actually have, and we have for the last 40, 50 years, we've had some of the world's best manufacturing facilities. I mean, look at Danel. We put out some stuff that the Americans are still using on there.
Really?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just testament to the fact that that is obviously a key income generator for us as a, for an OEM like Mercedes-Benz, but for the South African government as well. So, you know, are we going to start seeing a lot more?
Yes. As far as I understand, there is a new Chinese manufacturer. Well, they're not really new.
Bike.
BAIC.
Yeah.
They are in the process of building a massive production facility just outside Kuha. And we're talking billions.
Sure. And that's obviously to manufacture here and
manufacture
then
vehicles and export.
Ship to China. Yeah. Or do you think there's going to be a local element to that there as well? It's not Haval, it's a bike.
We are going to see an influx of Chinese products over the next few years.
What is your take on that? I mean, you know,
developing nation, we need to be mobile. And with most people now not being able to afford an entry level 2-door hatch,
there is a
space for it. If you can dish out 135 grand for a brand new car.
But what's the build quality of that going to be like?
The funny thing is, though, it's getting better.
Yeah.
So the Chinese products that we would recommend or we would have known from years ago.
Yeah, are not.
It's not what they're putting out now. They've really worked on the quality and the build of their
products. I think the best place to see that is if you look at the GWM products.
Yeah, Haval.
10 years ago. And I know I owned a few GWM buckets were kind of held together with duct tape and some spit
yeah.
And now it's on par with an entry level Toyota.
They're actually heading for European quality levels now.
Sure, but well, I must say, I think the Chinese are very, very good at that. I was fortunate enough to go to Shanghai once, and I've never seen so many fake Mercedes Benzes in my life. But
they're very good at copying.
But then obviously to your point, they understand that the quality has to be there. Mm. Otherwise, they're not going to sell their product. I mean, that's just, you know.
Yeah, look, Haval, which has just recently made an appearance in South Africa, they've been China's number one selling SUV for 14 years.
Yeah.
And we are now starting to see things like the H2 and the H6C.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we've got two of them on test right now.
Yeah.
And they are bloody good.
Yeah, they're, I mean, we were sitting at the launch.
I'm like,
I mean,
this is Kia and Hyundai from 10 years ago. It's that good.
Well, that's fantastic to see. Really, really good. I see that there was a car thief jailed after Valentine's Day confession. I thought the story was really funny. So how's this? A Polish fugitive, car thief, he chose Valentine's Day to give himself up after a year in hiding, saying that he had enough of arguing with his girlfriend. He asked police to arrest him and because he'd had enough strife with his partner. And he's been in hiding for a year. So this guy's been sentenced to jail for 17 months. And
For stealing a car.
Whose car? His girlfriend's car.
No, I don't know whose car. But he obviously, so my thinking is, this guy stole the vehicle, right? He got back to his place, obviously informed his girlfriend. She's been in his ear for over a year, and he's gone, you know what? Let me just rather go and spend 17 months in jail, peace and quiet. Thank you very much. I'm handing myself over to police because I cannot take the whinging anymore.
This does say some things about Polish women, apparently.
They do seem quite feisty, but I mean, I just thought that was really, really funny. So a little Valentine's Day news coming out there. And then something else, 12 million cars in South Africa, that's plus minus how many vehicles we have on the road. 70% of our vehicles on our roads are uninsured. That is a frightening statistic, because that's 7 out of 10 vehicles that you see do not have insurance.
Now, my question is, how many of those cars have been paid off?
Probably
because it is actually, as far as I understand, it's against the law to drive a vehicle
without insurance
if you haven't paid it off.
Yeah. So my question is this: so are people going, okay, cool, I'm going to get the vehicle and I'm going to get insurance for the car and I do all the paperwork properly, thanks very much, and after that first installment goes off, you know what, I don't need insurance on my vehicle, thanks very much.
It happens more often,
but it's illegal. And the thing is, and the biggest problem with
you're not allowed to drive a car without having insurance?
You're not allowed to drive a car that is still under a payment plan.
Yes.
Because the car doesn't belong to you.
No, the bank owns it.
Yes.
You are driving the bank's car. And if you crash that car or somebody crashes into you,
the bank will still want their
you
money.
You are still liable for that.
Yeah, exactly.
So would you like to be sitting paying $5,000 a month for a car that you don't have?
No, obviously not.
And you have 5 years to pay that car off. And you will pay and pay and pay.
Until you've paid it off.
And just default, and you'll see what happens. They come and fetch your furniture.
But that's crazy. You know, 70%. I mean, that's a huge, huge, huge number.
Stupid.
So, I don't know. I don't know what how they're going to change that.
I think it's an education problem as well.
I mean, insurance is not that expensive. I think the most expensive insurance you can get for a four-door sedan is like $450 a month.
Yeah.
It depends on the car and depends on the driver profile.
Well, yes. If you
also depends where you're parking it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. If you take just an entry-level insurance, R200 a month.
Yeah.
You're covered against the car being stolen or smashed, act of God, whatever.
Mm.
You know, they'll take care of them.
I don't know. I don't know about getting onto South African roads and not having insurance or knowing that you're covered. Like, I don't know. I personally couldn't do it. I really, really couldn't. Because you never know.
It's also not only about your own damage. It's about the damage of the car.
Because if you
hit.
Absolutely.
Can you imagine you're in a little Polo.
Exactly.
And you hit a Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, you're pretty
stuffed.
You've
got to pay for that Oaks car.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I would run a mile.
Well, that's
you
the
can
funny
try,
thing.
But the mafia will find you.
Yeah, exactly. The guy coming out on his rolls.
We've actually found that a lot of guys that have expensive supercars and things of that nature, they don't even bother insuring them.
Yeah.
Because if I got that kind of money to spend,
disgusting.
But those exotic cars, I've heard, I mean, insurance on those cars are
$20,000 a month, if you're lucky. Yep.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if it smashes, I'll buy another one.
If I had a golf clap button here to push it, I would. But, Chad, were you stuck in traffic this morning?
I was, yes.
Okay, and how
did you have fun?
No. I've had fun before, and that wasn't it.
That was definitely not fun. Well, anyway, thanks for joining us. Really, really good to have you in studio. Yeah, so that brings us, just quickly, I want to touch on some F1 stuff here, because I see there's a whole bunch of people that have kind of, I mean, we spoke about this last week, about the grid girls now being banned, and they're going to replace grid girls with...
Grid kids,
yeah. So the German Grand Prix boss says he is not opposed to the grid kids idea, and he says the new Formula One owner, Liberty Media, obviously has banned grid girls, and they're replacing them with children, and they're going to, hopefully, they want to try and grow a younger audience for F1. I don't see how having grid kids is going to...
My issue is with Liberty Media. They have, it's an American company, yes.
Yeah.
They've come in, they've changed the broadcast times to suit the American audience.
But that's the biggest audience, so they obviously drive a lot of money to do that. It's, you know, TV rights and stuff. And so,
they're taking away from what makes Formula One Formula One.
The racing?
Yes.
I'm going to respectfully disagree there. If anything, they've brought that back, and they've injected in some much needed interest into the racing itself, and less into the Bernie Eccleston show that it was.
That was what Formula One was.
It the Bernie was the Eccleston circus. Show. Yes, yeah, no. But it was all about the politics away from the racing, and nothing about, and very little about the racing itself. So I don't think that Liberty is all the evil doer here. Mm. But I just don't think that this is the smartest move on their part.
I don't think it's the smartest move. I mean, you're
changing up what is essentially what people know and what they like about Formula One. What, you know, the knock-on effect is, what does this do to other sports? MotoGP, they've got grid girls.
Yeah.
You've got the...
Take a girl away from a biker, though. Good luck.
Yeah. That's not going to happen. Those pretty young things that walk around in the boxing with the sign.
Yeah, UFC. That sort of stuff, yeah.
You know, this is... it's.
But these are all young ladies who obviously belong to promotional what they companies, and that's what they do for a living. Well, and you know, while they're studying, while they're becoming lawyers and doctors,
you hope.
Well, exactly. You know, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know if, you know, now it's this whole just children thing. I don't know. Like, just
but
for me,
what
it
was,
doesn't
what was
make
the
sense.
Main reason why they took grid girls off?
They believe that it is sexist, and it's. That kind of thing, you know.
Really? And that's what the Americans pick up on?
Yes. Well, we how do we know they are...
They have the orange Cheeto Mussolini in the White House, but that's what they pick up on?
Yeah, they reckon it's degrading to women.
Do you think this comes after the whole Hollywood thing where all the women
More
are
than
standing
likely,
up now?
Yeah. I don't know. I just... I think it's a
sure
it's
should
in
be
terms
a,
of respecting
they should
them
they
more.
Should give the girls the, you know, if they want to do it, let them do it.
I the objectification it of women, and I think they're trying to steer clear of that, and they're rather trying to replace it by introducing a youthful aspect so that it appeals more to youngsters, because I understand that the youth is the future of the motorsport and the future investors, etc. And in the similar way that they did it with the soccer or the rugby, and having the youngsters, you know, head out in front of the team and the likes.
Mm.
Yeah,
it's
I don't
good,
know.
I mean,
it's,
I mean, how
it's
many
valiant kids? Effort, but...
In all fairness, these grid kids aren't just random kids.
No, sure.
They are young racers, so they come from the go-kart tracks and so on. And I think for those kids, it would be one hell of a thrill to actually be there on the grid with the Formula
yeah,
One.
Yeah, having met an inspirational in that sense.
Exactly.
Yeah. No,
so, yeah, we're taking
I'm
away
not
from
the
grid girls,
kid
but we're actually
it,
doing
yeah.
something nice for the young racers.
Yes, yeah. But I still don't think that it's going to grow a younger television audience by having grid kids
so.
Standing.
No,
you know.
I don't think anybody watches Formula One for the cute.
No, I don't think they do watch it for the cute, and I don't think they watch it for the grid girls either.
I don't think anybody's watching
honest.
Formula One, period. Let's put it that way.
No, even I've started to watch Formula One. It can be enjoyable sometimes.
Let the guys pass each other again. Actually make the like decent it's racing and not to who gets pole position and gets out in front and stays that way.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a bit of a circus at the moment. But we'll see what happens. I mean, Niki Lauda has slammed it. There's a whole bunch of drivers that have just gone, come on, man, really, let's be real. And at the end of the day, it should be up to
And even the grid girls themselves, I said, excuse me, but you're now actually, you're taking away my job.
Yeah.
For what?
And sadly, I mean, this is a bit of a problem that I've got. It's a personal little stance and a personal opinion. It's just that, you know, you're taking away the masculinity of it. And part of masculinity is the female aspect and the defeating danger and the fear element of it, you know, and doing something that the average man can't do. And if you're sitting there and you're introducing halos and all the safety aspects and there's minimal risk and you're now just a monkey that's pulling a lever, pushing a button, you know, the ape behind the wheel.
Yeah. It's not racing anymore.
Then where's the real thrill in it? You've removed a lot of the thrill aspect and a lot of the appeal aspect.
We were having this argument this morning.
It becomes a technical approach to things instead of a, you know, a little retaining a little bit of the brawn in it. You disagree?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we were having this argument this morning about
everything else. You try having a crash at 300 and come out of it alive.
No, agreed.
Yeah, look, I mean, that's going to be...
If you're going to put a halo on the car, you might as well just put an F-14 fighter pilot cockpit on the thing.
And even then the danger will still be there.
Yeah, but not at the same levels. It's the same reason that we don't do supersonic transatlantic flight anymore, that we don't go try and visit the moon, that the modern 370Z is slower than the 300ZX. You know, we're going backwards. We've become safe. We've become a nanny state.
And
you've just bought into it.
And I blame...
That's all.
The Americans. Sorry to say.
Travis Pastrana for president. He's still doing stuff that will get you killed.
Yeah, exactly. And the guys are pushing boundaries, but they are. I hear what you guys are saying, and you know, we experience this in our daily lives, mm-hmm. where everyone now needs to be rewarded, and everyone needs a pat on the back, and it doesn't work like that later on in life. It really doesn't. So anyway, we'll keep a close eye on that story. The F1 starts 9 March, doesn't it?
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah. Testing in Spain.
Anyway, George will be back next week to unpack all of that for us. Right, guys, let's get on to our topical stuff here. So I see Volvo has been named as one of the world's most ethical companies. So Volvo Cars has been recognized by the Ethisphere Institute, a global leader in defining and advancing the standards of ethical business practices, as a 2018 world's most ethical company finalist. There's only three companies out of the automotive sector that have... you know, that are finalists. And the president of and CEO of Volvo Cars has said responsible business is a fundamental part of Volvo Cars' culture and the way of operating, and something that they continuously promote internally as well as with their business partners. And the CEO on the ground here in South Africa they subscribe to those global policies, and Volvo locally on the ground are in the process of rolling out the code of conduct for business partners to all of their local suppliers and partners. And this got Chad and you and I were talking in the office. You know, how important is ethics in the motor industry? And you know, I take my hats off to a company like Volvo who have obviously been rewarded with this. You know,
accolade,
because they clearly do stuff right, and that's just screams the Swedes for me.
And they're like very
everything
sort of
by the book,
and not so much everything by the book, just a slightly more liberal state. Mm. You know, just, you know, I'm a little more casual about things, but I'm in doing that, I'm new age in the sense that I'm going to look after the environment X, Y, and Z. And I like to think that there's a good number of, or there's a lot of pressure, let's put it that way, on our local manufacturing plants. And then we know that BMW Roslyn has also done massive, massive strides in terms of turning
Volkswagen as well.
Yeah, in terms of turning their plant green. I think Dedrick was saying that by 2020 or something of the sorts, that they're wanting to achieve X amount of certification. It was a while ago that we spoke about it, so I can't recall the exact names. Yeah. But, you know, there's one thing in terms of the production of these green vehicles. But the bit, when you sit there and you just put a blanket term over it, is the motor industry ethical? That, for me... I can't necessarily
say. Well, I mean, we already know the number of alarm bells that have gone off in the past with, you know, cheating on emissions tests.
Yeah,
that's not ethical. How we test our vehicles, what creatures we use to test our vehicles on.
Refusing to issue a recall for a car that cuts its fire bites off.
Well, there we go. So, you know,
let's not go down
really
that
not
road.
Winning favors there with that manufacturer, are you?
But again, but to our point, and you know, we're not trying to slate anybody. Mm. You know, I think a lot of the stuff is, you know, it happens. There's not one single person, you know, pushing buttons and stuff. So you
know, there's massive boards behind it.
Absolutely.
You know, that are making business decisions, because why, they've got financial and longevity in mind there.
Correct.
And one of the big ones that when it comes to the ethical debate that springs to mind is caring about your consumer.
Yes.
It's one thing caring about the environment, but when you sit there and you're not really too concerned about your consumer because you're just geared for sales. And we've got a couple of manufacturers, and I'm going to be PC about it here, and I'm going to say, not mention names, but we've got a couple of manufacturers there that have got no problem
releasing vehicles with a zero-star Euro NCAP rating. Mm-hmm. And they're prepared to sell it off at 2,000 rand a month or something of the sort just to get them in a vehicle to make a sale.
Yeah.
They will go on record and they will admit that, listen, we do not like our entry-level product, but it's a business tactic so that we can sell vehicles.
But then again...
That's not ethical books.
No.
But then again, like, you know, so so they're obviously doing that as a it's a business decision and it makes sense to them. So do you think they can, because ethics is quite a, it's a funny topic because it's very, very personal. Like what's ethical for me might not be ethical for you.
Correct. Correct.
And that's just society and how we brought up and stuff. But ethics in the motor industry, we're going to debate it for a while now and let's have that discussion. And this will bring us to a point here. The recycling of older models for new ones.
This is an amusing one, yeah.
Yeah, so like, you know, budget models. And unfortunately, we're going to go with the brand that has been, you know, in South Africa for ages.
Best-selling and most recent
brand that I've personally owned. I absolutely love the brand. I think they're phenomenal at what they do. It's the people's car, blah, 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 blah. But if you have a look at some of the outgoing models, like the Polo, the 6R, which was the label, the TSI, I think, Chad?
Yeah, colloquially it was known as the TSI Polo.
And that platform that they were manufacturing that vehicle on is now being used for the
Polo Vivo.
Mm. Yeah. And, you know, just reading, you know, there is another article that we'll unpack now, but...
Now, that's not a terrible point, because... If we sit there and we think about our, just touching on what we were talking about, ethics in terms of releasing a vehicle that's got a zero star Euro NCAP rating, you've got manufacturers that are sitting there and they've got the tooling in that, and yes, they're providing a budget alternative to a vehicle that is known to be popular, but the safety rating on that is no older than 10 years maybe, which means that it's still pretty respectable when you consider the price. And there are manufacturers that can do that, and many manufacturers do this in terms of recycling older models to bring them in and offer a budget alternative. But then you've got those manufacturers that are just bringing in brand new models that still don't pass.
Mm. Yeah.
Look, the Vivo, well, the new Vivo, in its outgoing form as a 6R Polo, was still quite near the top of its class in terms of safety features.
Yeah.
And they retained most of them. Okay, they ditched a couple of side airbags, but the basic structure is still there, so it's still a robust car, and it still has two airbags and available stability control and so on. So I think Volkswagen is actually doing an ethical thing here. Yeah, ABS is standard and two airbags. I think Volkswagen is actually doing the ethical thing by making those features available, at least the basic bare necessities, available in a strongly built car.
Yeah.
To at least offer some level of contemporary crash performance.
But that just tells me that as a brand, they actually care about their consumer.
They
do.
The problem is now, so many of the people that own the, and for the lack of a better term, that own the TSI, feel that by them introducing the Vivo, it's now devalued their vehicle. And I don't necessarily agree with that.
No, not at all.
Well, I'd like to hear you guys debate this.
It's maybe perception. And I mean, I think Martin, Lawrence, I think you guys are going to be on the same page as me here. One, guys, stop whinging. This has been happening since City Golf.
Yes.
Okay, City Golf came out. What did Mark 1 Golf owners feel? Oh, you know, here's a continuation of my car.
Mm.
All of a sudden, my car's gone down in value. Same thing happened with the 9N, 9N3 Polo. That came out as the Vivo as well. Toyota Taz.
Corolla Quest.
Nissan Micra Active. This is not the first time that this happens, but you're getting your panties in a knot because you feel that you spent so much money and now it's being regarded as a Vivo.
Mm. Well, but it's not.
It's not, because I've got news for you. Because going forward, there are differentiating features between the Polo, the genuine Polo, let's call it the TSI for the sake of a better term here, and the Vivo.
Exactly. It's not the same car. It looks the same. It uses the same body, but everything else is different.
So when you can go out there and you can get a nice new Vivo and it is so popular, do you not think that your genuine Polo with its elevated build quality, I'm not going to say better, but elevated build quality and elevated trim level and better spec level is not going to retain its value?
Yeah.
Exactly. It is. We saw that with the 9N3. It held its value surprisingly well, the genuine Polo, when that Vivo shape was released, the 9N3 Vivo shape was released. It held it well because people could differentiate. They didn't, I don't want the budget level Vivo. I actually want the one that looks like the Vivo because it's cool.
Yes.
But I want the one that's got the better safety and the better trim. So I'm actually going to go hunting for a good quality Polo.
Yeah.
As much as it's a little bit old and not as new, because I know it's you know, and then I can say to people, no, I've got the Polo. I don't have the Vivo. I've got the genuine Polo.
But I mean, but it is labeled the Polo Vivo. Do you think that Polo tag will ever be stripped away and it'll just be called the VW Vivo? No.
Don't think so.
It's always going to be a Polo
thing
Vivo.
Is, Polo brand name carries a huge lot of weight in South Africa. It is actually an aspirational thing. I think that's actually why so many people are complaining about their perceived loss in resale value. They're trying to turn their little budget cars, because essentially a Polo is it's a B-segment commuter car.
Yeah.
It's a mass market thing. They're trying to make it exclusive, and I don't really understand why.
Yeah, you can't sit there and take, you know, something that you can't take a packet of jelly tots and make one of them exclusive.
Exactly.
It's a packet of jelly tots. They're all the same, buddy.
Not if they sell 1,500 of them a month.
Yeah, you can't.
It's never going to be exclusive.
But, I mean, you've got to understand the thinking behind it. First-time owners, there's an aspirational value. It's got the VW badge on it, is affordable and that, but I don't want the poverty spec one, you know. It's this is on my path to getting a GTI, which, as we know, in South Africa is a massive status symbol.
Absolutely.
You know, this is on my way to getting a GTI, so I need, you know, I don't want my Polo that I spent good money on, because I graduated from a 9N3 Vivo to that Polo, and now you're telling me that the one that I graduated to is no better than a Vivo.
Yeah,
or you regard it as a Vivo. And no, that's not what VW is saying.
No.
And VW actually doesn't care about your status.
Nope.
No.
So
they want to sell cars. They want to sell good cars with no recalls.
You know, and I don't know if it's like this in other countries, but you know, that status thing around driving a vehicle, is that I think that's self-created. Am I right?
Yeah, I think it's culturally created locally, and it's certain things that are driven by media. So media perceptions, you know, as soon as somebody places some amount of value on it and gets somebody to agree that there's value to it, that's got a knock-on effect.
Yeah.
It's Bitcoin.
I think Volkswagen's
doesn't really exist.
Yeah. Volkswagen's marketing actually created this monster, because they managed to get to the Volkswagen somehow managed to move themselves up market.
Yeah.
Which means that the Polo is now also seen as half a cut above, let's say, Fiesta or a Corsa or anything of that sort. While in reality, they're basically just competitors.
Yeah, on the level playing field.
But
there,
so in terms of how the OEM has built the brand, how the brand has been built, and I mean, I'll sing you VW advert tunes all day long.
Yeah. No, they've always had a fantastic marketing department.
Absolutely.
I think that's where this whole thing comes from.
Do you think the turning point was that Polo ad where he ran out and stopped the car in front of the... It was that series of ads. He drove down in the Cape, and there was that runaway bus or runaway truck or something.
Oh,
the cement mixer, and then he went and stopped in front of it. Nice. Polo, you'll think you can.
That was the
catchphrase. And there was a series of them with, you know, in a Polo, and you'll think you can. And they even had a bit of a go at the BMW M5 advert with the land speed record. The land speed record car, the BMW ad, let's regale it quickly. Yeah. The land speed record, you got this tracking shot of this land speed record vehicle going along, barreling along, parachute comes out, and then they stop it and they climb out of the camera car and they show and you that the camera car is a BMW M5.
Yes,
A VW replicated that, but the land speed record car just disappeared off into the distance and left it behind. And this guy climbed out of a Polo, and the like, catch tag was, you'll think you can.
I mean, you know, really,
so I mean,
that is so clever.
I mean, it was brilliant. It's ingenious in that, and it was largely South African market only.
Yes.
But I think that was possibly a large driving factor in, hey, you know, here's this cool thing. Take a look at these great, cool, funny adverts and that.
But I mean,
I suppose it's the same reason why we still eat Nando's.
Well, yeah, well, there must be some reason. Nobody knows. But I see the same thing happening actually with this new Vivo. Volkswagen at the press launch event last week.
Yo, who was there?
I was.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, they actually consciously and obviously pitch this thing as like half a cut or a cut above the normal bargain or budget cars. They, from the word go, they pitch it as slightly better than anything else at the same price. And I think most of the buyers actually buy into that.
Well, of course they do. And I mean, you guys as the media, obviously all there, and you you know, you get the bells and whistles and the fanfare, and you guys go off and you write articles.
But it's our job to see through the fanfare, though, and call it for what it is, hey?
No, absolutely.
I think this time around, Volkswagen actually does have a point.
It is better.
Yeah, it is better than just about anything else at the same price.
A good product's a good product, and we're not going to knock it.
Yeah.
And yeah, this new Vivo is, you know, it's considerably better than the City Golf, and even better than what the City Golf was compared to its rivals at the time.
Yeah.
Its rivals at the time, the City Golf was left in short trousers out in the cold. Mm. But now the Vivo is actually, well, you're sort of leading this race. And if you're going to push out a Corolla Quest, or you're going to push out a Figo, or a Corsa Lite, or a Microactive, or something of the sorts, you really need to come to the party now.
Well, you've got to, you've got to one up the game. You again. Have to one up your competitor. Mm, otherwise, absolutely.
And the thing is, well, again, back to the Vivo, as a 6R, it was still pretty much at the top of its class.
Yeah, it was great.
When it was discontinued.
Mm. Yeah, I can't knock it.
And when it got replaced. And they managed to keep most of those characteristics in. And basically transfer that into the Vivo.
Yeah, they retained it without. Well, they didn't lose.
Yeah,
they didn't lose too much.
So
in
what we have in the end is a budget market car, or relative budget market car.
That is really, really good.
That can actually stand and hold its head up high amongst proper B-segment cars.
Some of the contemporary.
Yes.
B-segment vehicles. Yes. Yeah, it's to within an 85-90 percentile.
It's no worse than an i20 or probably about level peg with Fiesta,
which is, you know, so I mean, you know, back to the topic of ethics. Nothing wrong with what they're doing.
No,
because
I don't
not
believe it's an unethical. No.
Absolutely,
and I don't believe that the public perception of it hurting the Polo name is accurate.
No,
I can understand for the lack of a better term, in an internet term, the butthurt. I can understand the butthurt around it.
Yeah.
Yes, because if you sat there and you took my car and you suddenly said, well, the car that you spent so much money on and you're still paying off, by the way, because you took a 30% balloon, is, you know, sorry, is now a budget vehicle, you know. It's they haven't slashed the prices. They haven't sat there and said, okay, well, that car that you paid 200,000 rand for last year is now only 100,000 rand.
Yeah.
In fact, they've just kept the pricing
More or less where it was,
maybe to within 80-85%, but they've stripped 15-20% off of the vehicle to warrant that price decrease to make it a Vivo.
Yeah. Okay, well, really, really interesting and nice to get your guys' opinions on that. And I think something that we'll chat about and keep an eye on as we go is just, you know, ethics in motoring. And we could have spoken about this earlier with the whole speed camera. Is it ethical to hide a speed camera and then, you know, trap somebody? But we've had that discussion. Right, guys, Lawrence, you have recently driven the Range Rover Velar, am I right? Or have you all driven
it? No. I had the Range Rover Velar P380 HSC R Dynamic on test for a week.
The Gesundheit.
And
is that, I mean, look, that's unethical to give cars names like that.
You've got to give it a name.
Until you understand why they called it that one, P380.
P380 means
petrol.
Yeah.
It's petrol and it's got a 3-liter V6 supercharged engine.
380 horsepower. That's the 380.
Okay.
280 kilowatts. R Dynamic, which means it has like this racing feel to it. It has the body kit on it, blackout. It's one hell of a car. It's
here comes the butt.
You know, I'll get to the
beautiful thing. I'll get
it is a beautiful
car. The butt
car.
Looks good. Oh, it does look good.
That's
that
such a looker.
It is beautiful inside. It's elegant. It's sophisticated. And it warrants the 1.5 million rand price tag. But
a lot of money.
Two days into
what these cars cost.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And what its competitors cost as well. It really is. So.
And I was thoroughly enjoying my time with the vehicle until 2 days in. And then a little problem manifested itself.
You had a small glitch.
The computer system in the car decided to go on the fritz.
So the entire computer system?
The entire computer system. I would be driving along and all of a sudden the air suspension would lower itself.
Like a lowrider.
Yeah.
Nice.
Or the
slammer.
Absolutely.
The massage function on the seats would just randomly turn on.
Sure you didn't mind that.
With that.
The computer screen in the center would reboot. And then it would refuse to read any media from anything.
Okay.
The navigation system would stop working. And this is, you know, I've spoken to a lot of my colleagues about it, and it just seems to be this car.
The one that you got.
JLR products are excellent. From the F-Pace to the F-Type. Chaddle, he's just come back from Sweden with JLR Ice Academy, and, you know, these cars are tested to hell and gone.
Mm.
And it's just, it ruined the experience.
I had minus 29 degrees and I didn't have a single car falter in that way. You know,
and
so
that's
this
why
is
I'm
really
sitting
just
there
a little
like,
bit of an anomaly, I think.
I'm so enamored with the vehicle, but I cannot ignore the fact that a 1.5 million rand car picked up a glitch in the computer system.
But surely that's something that's, I would assume, relatively easy to fix.
Well, I was a little bit concerned because, you know, this system controls the car.
Yeah.
It controls the handling, the aerodynamic settings, the air suspension. Now I'm worried I'm going to go around a corner and the suspension's going to deflate or something. So I actually stopped at a JLR dealership and I spoke to the techies and I said, listen, look, am I, you know, is this a problem?
Yeah.
And he was absolutely flabbergasted. He says, well, this is the first time we've ever seen anything like this. We've never encountered it. We'll have to book the vehicle in. And I'm like, whoa, no. You're not booking anything in.
Yeah.
I want to see this out.
Mm.
And this is the funny thing. The next day, the problem seemed to have resolved itself. And for 2 days, the car behaved itself. And then the day before I gave it back,
it started doing it again.
And now that's, you know, it's very, very difficult to ignore that. I want to say that it is an isolated incident. And I sincerely hope that it is because the Velar, I mean, listen, you've all driven more than one Land Rover, Range Rover, Jaguars. It's
like,
they don't build cars like that.
I mean, yeah.
You know, my review will be out shortly, so you'll be able to see all the pictures of it. I mean, it's beautiful interior.
Yeah.
It's such a stylish vehicle. You can understand why it's the go-to vehicle for politicians and premier footballers. It's that good.
Yeah, it's a cracking vehicle. I did the launch last year, and I walked away suitably impressed as well.
Yeah.
Tech takes a little bit of getting your head wrapped around. You know, it's very techy.
There's screens in the headrest. There's a center console-mounted screen. There's a dashboard-mounted screen, plus the digital screen, which is your gauge pod. It has a 50-gig hard drive on board, so you can save media and movies. So the kids have got headphones in the back with a remote control, a 4-zone climate control. It just goes on and on and on. And you can understand why it commands that price.
Sure.
It's beautifully trimmed as well.
Well, now, in really mitigation, your car had issues.
Yeah.
I actually had the good fortune of finding myself behind the wheel of, I think it was a D240.
Yes, 260.
So that's
240, 260,
one of the two. Yeah,
I'm forgetting.
So that's a four-cylinder diesel version of the Velar.
As soon as you know what it is, then it actually makes sense.
And that one screen did not malfunction at all.
Yeah.
Nothing on the car's computer.
And oddly enough, you had an Alfa Romeo.
But I only drove it for a day.
You also had an Alfa Romeo, and that didn't set a single foot wrong.
Nope, it didn't even leak oil. Nothing.
And it started every time you climbed in?
It actually performed flawlessly, and I want
the world
so bad.
The world has gone to hell in a handbasket. It really is. This is apocalypse now. It's alphas are reliable, and I'm not going to say anything about Jaguar. They've been too nice to me.
No, they have. Listen quickly. Just touch your trip. Just quickly unpack it.
I spent a week at the Jaguar Land Rover Ice Academy, which is out just on the brink of the Arctic Circle, so 66.05 degrees north. Arctic Circle is 66.3 degrees, so
okay,
really
so there.
Literally a couple of minutes both ways.
Slightly chilly there.
Very chilly, yeah. Temperatures between minus 14 and minus 29 that we saw, but the whole idea of it was 3-4 days of driving on the frozen lakes of northern Sweden, a driving experience, not necessarily instruction per se.
Sure.
While you had instructors and they taught you a couple of the techniques, and that was to go out and experience the vehicles, experience what it's like to do winter testing and that type of thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. The thing is, it's not an isolated event, you know, that I'm one of the super lucky because I'm in the industry. We had people there that paid their way to go, and it is one of those experiences that you can pay. This is part of Jaguar Land Rover experience, and they've got three different ones. They've got rock climbing and bouldering in Utah, Moab Desert in Utah. You can go and do the dunes in Namibia, and you can do the frozen lakes in northern Sweden. And if you go into JLR Experience, you can, and when you search for that, you'll be able to go and see them and see what the pricing is like, and you too can
have
do
to
it.
Be an owner of one of the vehicles.
You don't have to. You don't have to be an owner. No, you can pay.
Well, in that case, I'm going to start saving now because I want to do 120 full lock on ice drifting in an F type.
You say that now.
I do.
No, you do. Everybody does. After a while, you acclimatize. and they really wait on you hand and foot. They really make it such an enjoyable time despite the crazy conditions. Everything's geared for it, you know. Yeah. So
I mean, what was it like driving? Because I mean, you're a red-blooded South African. You've pretty much driven.
I've been burnt by the African sun. It's a little bit of a change.
Absolutely. And then you completely, that's a 360 degree kind of change, you know, from...
It is completely polar. Yeah. With no pun intended.
Minus 29 degrees.
Yeah, from 32 degrees to minus 32 degrees.
The thing is, as soon as you go past, let's say, minus 5, as long as the wind's not blowing, it's just cold.
Yes.
Plain and simple. You can't tell the difference between minus 12 and minus 29. It could be minus 40.
Yeah.
As long as the wind's not blowing, you can't feel it. You stop being able to differentiate that cold because it's past spectrums that you know. And everything's geared for it. You've got your clothing. And believe it or not, by the last day, I was walking around with a T-shirt and a single puffer jacket.
Yeah.
In minus 14, minus 15 weather because the wind wasn't blowing. And wind doesn't blow that much.
And the vehicles spec'd differently, or is it...
Stock standard vehicles. They just put a little stainless steel, like a bumper guard on the front because being with the proximity to the ice and the cold weather...
Yes, crash into snow.
And you are going to crash into snow.
Yeah.
It makes the plastic lips very brittle, and those break off too often, so they just put a little stainless steel piece on it, and then they're running on studded tyres. I mean, I had the F-Pace, the Velo, Range Rover Sport, stupid angles, silly. I was spinning it out, and I was sideways on ice in these vehicles, and then in F-types as well.
Mm.
The 280 kilowatt V6s, a supercharged V6s, and the 420 kilowatt V8s, I think it is.
428, I think.
Yeah, 428, somewhere like around that. There. So, yeah. The supercharged V8s and the supercharged V6s in rear-wheel drive and all-wheel drive. Those ones were running on motorsport tyres with the studs on. The other ones were running on studded tyres, but road-legal studded tyres.
So that's really the only change then between what you'd get there and what you'd get here.
Absolutely, and it gave me such a brand new respect for the likes of the F-Pace. Yep. The F-Pace is such a fantastic SUV, especially when it comes in at that price, despite the inflated import costs and that sort of stuff. It's cracking vehicle.
Yeah, I fell in love with it last year. 1.3 million rand for that, for the F-Pace.
Is value.
Absolutely amazing vehicle.
Velo's running the same underpinnings with the fancier top on it, and same. If you spin out an F-Pace or a Velo, you are really don't belong behind the steering wheel.
Or you're on ice.
No, even then. We dialed in stupid amounts of angle, and with the rear-wheel drive bias, it'll send 90% of the power to the rear, but still 10% to the front. That 10% pulls you out. We dialed in more than 90 degrees, full counter steer, you plant it, and we were just running 3-litre diesels, you know, babies. Plant it, and it starts pulling you straight. I'm like, if you lose this vehicle, you know, lose control of this vehicle, you really need to go and attend a bit of a driving course.
Yeah.
And it's not to say because I'm involved with it that
I'm sure.
We had wives and partners that aren't necessarily petrol heads that were dragged along.
Mm.
And they were saving these vehicles from ludicrous angles on the ice. And it wasn't because of the fancy tires and that. Trust me, it was as
But that's the tech. That's obviously that's the tech that the is tech, now put into the vehicles that are being manufactured.
Gave me a brand new respect for them, hey?
Okay, now I have a question.
Sure.
Has this experience had any impact on your driving skills in general?
It has, yes. It has, because a lot of what you do to get the vehicle sideways, because the instructors go out there and say, here, go try and get it sideways.
Yeah.
And we're going to show you how to bring it back. And is weight transfer. Because all these vehicles are running electronic handbrakes, you can't pull up on a handbrake. Sitting there and trying to weight transfer in Scandinavian, flick the vehicle, and he's going to do nothing because the front wheels just understeer as you get aggressive on it. So what you have to do is you have to come off the power, load up the front wheels, and then turn in once it's weighted. And then you just wait, and the tail will come round. And as the tail starts rotating like
lift
that,
off oversteer.
It's basically lift off. That's exactly what it is. It's teaching you lift off oversteer in really controllable conditions. And as soon as it steps out like that, then you just play with the power, play with the steering, and they teach you how to balance an all-wheel drive, a rear-wheel drive biased all-wheel drive, and, you know, rear-wheel drive vehicles, sports cars. So driving it on the road, I've become so much more conscious of the weight transfer of a vehicle. It has. Sure. Do your braking in a straight line.
Yeah.
No trail braking. You do your braking in a straight line. If you're turning in, make sure that the vehicle's settled. And believe it or not, each and every corner that I go into, I'm sitting there and I'm feeling the weight transfer and I'm feeling how the back end does start rotating slightly.
So when you're going into a corner, you brake before you go in and
then accelerate.
Before
you start the steering.
You brake in a straight line. Okay.
You brake in a straight line. You come off it so that the vehicle neutralizes.
Yeah.
Once you're down to the speed that you need to do, then you turn. And then as soon as you pass the apex, then you can start feeding the power in.
But don't you think this is so important, and this is how people should be taught to drive, to actually understand what you have got?
What's the old motor racing team adage. If you want to win, employ a Finn. Somebody from Finland.
Okay.
This is the type of training that they have before they get their licenses.
Yes.
You know, so that they know how to drive in these types of conditions.
In other words, they learn how to drive, not just how to operate a car.
Correct.
Absolutely. Yeah.
In Germany, and there's you get your normal driver's license. Yeah. And if you want to drive on the Autobahn at 280, you need to do an advanced driving course.
Yeah.
And I firmly believe that it should be instructed. It'll create such a better quality of driver.
Mm. Well, we spoke about some of the...
K-53 is...
Sometimes it's more dangerous than...
It's way too defensive. I'm not saying you need to be a proactive or an aggressive driver.
Yeah.
But defensive driving doesn't need to come down to shuffling your hands.
Yes.
Observing 27 times before changing
you
the
need
lane.
To know what to do when a car does something. Yeah. If the car liftoff oversteers, you need to know what to do.
You need to know vehicle control.
Yeah.
What is the first thing most people do?
They're going to hit both feet on the brakes. Yeah.
And it's not so much about knowing what to do when it loses control. You need to understand why it loses control so that you can prevent it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And that's where people come in here and we're forced to put ABS and EBD and TCS and DSC and all that sort of stuff into these vehicles because guys think that us that started driving with unassisted vehicles.
Yeah.
If you're braking, don't turn. Nothing's going to happen because the wheels are going to lock and you're going to turn until you're blue in the face.
Exactly.
We know this.
Yeah.
But with ABS, you can do that now.
Yeah.
And that's now where these systems have to be filtered in because there isn't the driver education.
Yeah.
It's become too mainstream to train everybody.
Yeah, it's just a case of get in, write your test, learn how to parallel park, accelerate, don't roll backwards on a hill, and away you go.
Is that ethical?
No, well, it's not ethical.
There we go. Let's dial it back to ethics.
Yeah, because you're actually endangering everybody else's lives that are on the road by, okay, cool, this guy can, you know, the car's not rolling back, but does he really know that when he gets into a sticky situation, can he get himself out of it? Is he not going to overreact, or do something crazy? Blindly swerve without...
You put somebody on a skid pan and you put them through these instances where a vehicle loses control
.
And you won't believe what it does to the ingrained reaction
of the psychology behind it. Same thing
happens when you do a motorcycle course.
Yeah.
As a driver, you go and do an introductory motorcycle course. I guarantee you, after you finish that course...
You'll have more respect.
You become immediately more aware of two-wheeled vehicles around you.
Yeah. Oh, completely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Even if you're not a biker, you just immediately start, oh, wait a minute, there's a biker there.
Yes.
And in the same sense, you go and do a truck license and straight away you're more aware of trucks and the challenges that they face.
Yeah.
And you're a little more compassionate because that's one of the biggest things is the inconsideration for your fellow road user. And that's what causes.
There we go.
And that's exactly why I was late today. So.
Or did you get stuck behind a truck?
Well, inconsiderate people.
All of us, really. Anyway, gents, that brings us to the end of the show. Unluckily, we didn't get to chat about one of the tech articles that I had here, but nonetheless, a great show anyway. We'll get into that in the next 2 weeks. And if you're out there on the roads, take it easy. I would highly recommend doing a driver's course, really.
They're not that expensive, and sometimes they will lower your insurance premiums as well.
If you've done that.
If you've done one and you present it to your insurance, they will sometimes reduce your premium.
Well, there's another way you can save on insurance costs. So, guys, thank you very much. Good show, and until next time.
This is CliffCentral.com.